Athletes, take your mark. Get set. It's time for the Addict to Athlete podcast. Everybody out there, Coach Blue Robinson. Listen, athletes and listeners, I want to thank you for downloading, subscribing, and sharing this podcast. It's awesome to see you guys benefiting from these informational and emotional podcasts. Please jump on, subscribe, give us some feedback. I love reading your feedback, and it does help the podcast reach further lengths. And so if you know anyone who's struggling from any kind of addiction, it does not just have to be a substance use, you know, alcoholism, and narcotics. It could be any form of addiction. Share this podcast with them. It'll help them understand the principles behind erasing addiction and replacing it with things of greater value. Athletes, I want to turn your attention to our online store. We have a brand new online store with a lot of new merchandise. And right now, with the Christmas season approaching, what better time than ever to, you know, give yourself a gift or a gift to someone that wants to, be part of Team Addict to Athlete by jumping on. You can get on our website, addicttoathlete.org, and follow the links to our store. You'll find a lot of cool stuff there. Also, I want to thank everybody who's been helping out with our Project ELF. This is the thing that Addict to Athlete got involved with many years ago to help raise money and provide Christmas for those who have struggled with addiction and have turned their lives around. They might find themselves in a situation where finances are tight because of everything that comes along with treatment and recovery and everything that life throws at them. And now this year, specifically with the COVID pandemic, we found that the help is much needed, and your participation is also a big part of us being able to provide for these less fortunate. So if you want to help with Project ELF, jump on to our social media and or reach out to marissa@addicttoathlete.org, and your donation can go directly to help people who are struggling make sure that Christmas doesn't sting or hurt, because I know that it's a big issue right now. I want to thank our Patreon members. For those Patreon subscribers, you are helping us move this podcast forward. And you know, we like to take a little bit of time to recognize those who are helping this movement through being a Patreon subscriber. We'll start with our super fans. We have Chris Williams, Brett Frew, The Fosters, Carolyn Harris, Holly Davies, and Tara, our sober coach from Telluride, Colorado. Thank you, Tara. We also have our rookie level donors. A shout out to Josh Hansen, Gary Thurston, Kenny Roseman, Earl Dyer, Joe Jackson, and Michelle Hansen. Thank you, rookie level subscribers. And now for our pro level, Selena Armitage. Thank you so much, Selena. If you guys haven't got to know Selena yet, go jump on Facebook, friend request her, because she is full of inspiration, doing all kinds of runs, having an amputee leg, and being able to still crush times that would put me to shame. And of course, our championship level donor. I want to give a special shout out and thanks to Freya and Shad Robison, Team Robison. You guys have definitely put a lot of faith into this team, and for that, we will forever be grateful. Athletes, I am excited to have a returning guest. And I love having returning guests because that means that A, they have amazing stories that they want to share. But also it means that you, the listeners, have really kind of said, hey, we want more of that person. And I think the categories in each of those fall right into the lap of our today's guest. I want to give a special shout out and thanks at an early 4 a.m. call time here with Chris Norris. Chris, say hello.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Good morning from Japan.
Man, brother, 4 a.m. Okay, we were just talking before we started recording that Marissa did an open gasp when she heard that you were up there at 4 a.m. But I thank you for sacrificing to spread some wisdom and some insight, and maybe just some pleas to get these folks up and moving, knowing that life sometimes feels like an uphill challenge, but you can finish it if you rise and shine. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Well, Chris, thanks again, man. You know, we've talked a little bit. You've jumped on one-on-one a few times. And your last podcast, we talked a lot about Dharma recovery and some of the efforts you're putting into place there about being mindful about your addictions and the challenges and the things that cause stress. But I wanted to shift focus today because you embarked on a very special experience and, put together a plan to raise awareness, money, in the name of recovery, in the name of our really dear friend who passed away, David Clark, and had an experience that I think is unlike many that I've heard. And a lot of it was because of your reason and because of the purpose, but also just, you know, where you came from. to actually make that happen. And despite roadblocks and COVID and town closures and detours, you still completed it. So if you wouldn't mind, we'll do just a brief introduction if you want to just let folks know who you are. And then we'll jump into the itch. What was the why that was behind that run? So welcome to the Addict Athlete Podcast.
Hey, thanks. I'm Chris Norris, and I'm in recovery from an alcohol use disorder and have been for over 13 years now. And so I've gotten into long distance running in 2015. I use running as a way to bolster up my sobriety and gave me something to do with my time. There's a story behind that. I was on an island off the coast of California working with the Navy, and there wasn't much to do out there on your off time other than fish and drink, and I didn't want to do either of those. So I bought a pair of running shoes and some nutrition and a water bottle, and I started to run, and I trained for a marathon. And I completed the marathon, and at the end of that, I thought to myself, what else could I do? So I got the itch to keep pushing further and further, and now I've completed 100 miles on October 23rd, and that came from, as Blue had said, a long road of recovery. I was training the year prior in 2019 to run a 110-kilometer race here in Japan when I was injured pretty substantially. I had a 9-millimeter bulging disc in my L4, L5. L4, jeez. L5 disc. Yeah, so it was pushing on my sciatic nerve, and it was really, really something. It was very painful. And I tell you, I mean, that injury and the subsequent surgery that happened, it happened 6 months later, I believe, right around there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it took a little while to make that happen. it was something. I tell you, I don't know. There was a point there in it all where I wasn't too sure if I was ever going to be able to run again.
I remember that's when I first kind of started to get to know you, was just leading up to that event. And David Clark, who is our mutual friend and coach, he connected us through the We Are Superman and Addict to Athlete, international team. Mm-hmm. And I remember you preparing for this race, and I remember watching you thinking, God, he seems like his heart's in it, and I know he wants to, but I'm like, he's talking about how he's been injured, and he's juggling, should I not? And when you decided not, you did something that I didn't think you would do. And again, this is back then, an outsider looking in. I know what's happened when I've, had to not start a race because of situations and stuff. And the last thing I want to do is go surround myself to feel bad about not participating, but you took a different road. You decided to go anyway and support the guys that were going to run it, knowing that you should have been out there too, but simply couldn't. What made you decide to do that? Because again, it's one of those things where you're almost like punishing yourself, but why did you decide to go and support instead of just stay home?
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. Leading up to the race, I was hemming and hawing whether I was going to do it. I'm glad I didn't, because I mean, if I did do it, who knows where we'd be at? I might not be on this podcast. So I'm like,
exactly,
a wheelchair or something, or who knows what would happen? Because I know myself so well. I'm like, I know if I line up and the gun goes off, it's going to take a lot to get me off the course. So I'm really going to mess myself up. When I finally made the decision that it just wasn't going to happen, I was in so much pain. The injury was so bad. That might be a sign there. If I'm running with a herniated spine, that might be a sign of something going on.
Something bigger. Yeah.
Something bigger, a bigger issue that we need to talk about here. So, the decision to go down and support my friend Corey, who is still doing the race, and to witness the race, it wasn't really a hard one to make. I wanted to be there. I wanted to witness it. I wanted to see it. I love being around these ultras, and I love being around the people and the energy and
the energy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just such a phenomenal thing. Like I said, even if I thought, even if I never ran again, I would still if I knew there was an ultra in town, I would want to hang out at the finish line, you know, and be part of that, be part of that energy and watch the people finishing and the emotions that are there. And here I'm in Japan, so I'm not understanding a lot of what's being said, but you can't deny, you know, someone tearing up and families running to them in embraces. And it's just such an emotional time out there.
Universal language, that struggle, huh?
Yeah. And then it's cool that, you know, I got full into like, you know, support mode, and I just met Corey at all the aid stations, and I was on it. Like I was really, really, really pushing him hard to get the best performance we could out of him, and he did wonderful. So
how far after that race that you went and supported Corey on, did you get your surgery? Because that had to have been a big thing too, because like you said, you didn't know if you were ever going to be able to run again after that, because back surgery is no joke. It's a big deal.
Yeah, so it was 6 months after the race I got the back surgery, and then it was 7 months after the back surgery that I lined up and did the 100 miles.
Seven months.
Yeah.
Man.
Probably not doctor recommended.
Chris, I was going to ask you, Chris, I'm like, again, because, well, here's the question I have for you then. Because so many times, right now we have in our home, Marissa's, her father's with us. He just had a pretty intense open heart surgery. And how old's Gary?
73.
Gary's 73, and he has been active his whole life. And then this guy ran marathons. He's the one that suckered me into running a marathon when I asked for Marissa's hand in marriage. Just 2 weeks before surgery, he and I were out cycling in Las Vegas. And it's interesting because I can see it in his eyes right now that there's nothing more that he wants than to get back on that bike or to go that for that walk or that run. But his body's saying no. And I can see it in his eyes, Chris. And my heart just breaks because I want to just say, come on, Gary, let's go. But he needs that time to recoup. 7 months seems pretty quick to flip and run another 100 miles. When you opened your eyes and came out of the fog of the anesthetic, you weren't thinking 100 mile, were you? What led you into that decision?
No, I wasn't thinking 100. I don't know if I was thinking 100 miles, but I was definitely thinking like, I've got to make my way back. I had a very strong desire to make my way back into running, but also having to say, you know, it might not be in the cards, you know, and an acceptance of that to try to.
You flirted with that. My time had passed. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I flirted with, especially before the surgery. I thought, you know, that it became apparent to me how important athletics had become in my life and how much I was leaning on it, and perhaps too heavily. And was I leaning on it for the wrong reasons too? Was I running and was I doing these things for some type of validation? You know, was I going to be good enough without it? You know?
Exactly. So will anyone know my name without it being, you know, without having a medal or a number pinned behind me? Or yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Right. Like who am I without this? And, you know, and what am I going to do if I can never run again? And would I, you know, am I going to be okay with never being able to do any, you know, any type of athletic thing again? So it was a struggle for sure. And it put me into therapy, which is fine. That's good. Maybe that's what I needed. So I got a lot of healing out of the therapy I did and continue to do.
I have a question about that real quick. I don't want to get too far off the topic, but you are a counselor. You help people, you do things, you know, like some pretty heavy lifting. You work with a very interesting population that weighs very heavy on the heart. And so I always ask this question, who heals the healer, right? And so was you going in to get help? Was that like, you know, what are they going to teach me? Or were you like, I just need something else? Like, I think that's really cool, Chris. It's hard for folks in our profession to then say, I'm going to go to someone that I know what they're going to ask me and I'm going to go do this. I love the fact that you were willing to do what you know works. How hard was that decision?
Yeah, it can be a struggle. But once I accepted it and once I was like, hey, I'm going to do it, I went at it with like the vigor I go with everything else. So I was completely open. And, you know, as much as you know, populations I've sat with, I still feel like, you know, I've got a ton to learn, you know. Yeah. So I sat with a guy who, you know, he had 10 years of private practice and he was It was good. It was really good.
And he asked you some pretty hard questions, didn't he? He wasn't throwing softballs at you by any means.
No. This was fast pitch stuff.
I love it, man. So, yeah.
But I mean, as you talked about, I kind of chuckle when you're talking about coming out of the anesthesia and stuff. I remember getting done with the surgery, and then they were getting ready to, they're like, okay, we're going to wheel you out of here. And they were talking to my wife, and they're like, okay, we'll pull the car up around the front and we'll get ready. And we're like, she's like, I'm like, no, we're walking. She's like, they're like, what?
Dude,
I'm like,
what?
I'm walking home. And they're like, sir, you can't walk home. I said, it's only a quarter of a mile. Like, I walked here, and we'll walk back. And they're like, they all looked at me like I was insane. And perhaps I was a little, but they didn't wheel me to the front door. They wheeled me to the back door. And they're like, here you go. Kind of dumped me out of the wheelchair. And we stumbled back home.
You walked home from back surgery?
Yeah, we walked.
Walked home from back surgery.
I walked home from back surgery. Just a quarter mile, dude, though. So like right around the corner.
Yeah.
The hotel is literally right next to the hospital. So I know it sounds crazy, but maybe it is. I don't know. But it was so funny that everyone like stopped doing what they were doing when I said, we're like, no, I'm going to walk home. And they like all, remember, they all turned and looked at me.
You hear the record, see the record player screech. What?
Yeah, and they're like, sir, you can't walk home. I said, it's right around the corner. It's literally around the corner.
Well, let's talk about that for a second then. That you can't, you know, I understand you shouldn't, and it's probably not a good idea, but really you can't, where you're like, right. I mean, did that resonate with you a little bit?
Yeah. You know, I guess that's a part of a little rebellious attitude inside me. I mean, the best motivational speech I ever got was you can't.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I was like, oh, I can't. Oh, watch me, you know.
See, and that's exactly I think the mirror image of like I said, my father-in-law, who I just idle, and I'm like, it just kills me because I know he wants to, but he shouldn't. And so he, you know, he's cool though, because I see him charging through all this stuff and still doing things that people say you can't. And he's like, well, I'll show you different. So I think there's something. Right. There's something good about that, but I also know that there's boundaries, because if someone would have approached you with Chris, it's not a great idea, or, you know, most people don't, you shouldn't, but hey, it's your life. I like that, giving us that choice instead of that like, you know, end of discussion. Mm-hmm. I think you get miles from people when you give them a choice rather than an ultimatum.
Yeah.
But you gave yourself an ultimatum, which was, I'm not letting this slow me down to the point where I'm ready to grab a cane, right?
No, I wasn't. But I was also really aware of what you're talking about there, that I know my personality. And I'm like, hey, like, so I set myself timelines of like, hey, first 6 weeks, nothing but walking. Like, right. Don't even try to step out a bit. So, and also limit my walking. Because the doctor told me, hey, I want you to start walking, you know, as much as possible. And then my wife was like, whoa, hey, no, don't tell him that.
Yeah.
like this guy will, you don't know this dude, like he'll walk a marathon, you know, so like limit it. So I was like, okay. So I limited my walking. And then at 6 weeks, I said, I'm going to start to, you know, just a slow jog. And then, you know, when I ran all this past the surgeon, he was like, good, good, good. And he was supportive of getting me back to running long distances again, which was surprising. You know, most doctors tend to try to hold me back a little bit from that stuff. And he was all about it. So
he supported you in some of your goals.
He did.
That's good.
And he could tell how important it was for me. So I limited myself though to like, you know, walking and then slow jogging and then, you know, swimming and then getting on, you know, machines, not and Nautilus and stuff like that. And then, you know, just happened to try to this balancing act of like, you know, getting ready for something epic while not pushing it too far that I don't allow my body to heal and really cause some permanent
Chris, was there any anxiety when you lined up for your very first maybe 5K or training or whatever? Was there any like in your head moments where you're like, man, I could really hurt myself doing this? Or were you like, I know my limits and I know my body, and you know, I'm going into it with a clear head? Like, because I know there's some people that get injured like that, and they get worried about getting back into it. And so they overdo things or underdo things because they're in their heads. So did you find yourself in that kind of space as you were approaching some of the firsts, again, the first run after surgery, the first long distance after surgery?
Yeah, for sure. It was kind of like just pushing it just a little bit and then like, okay, how's that feel? And then, you know, and being ecstatic when I was like, oh my goodness, like I can jog a little bit and it doesn't hurt. And it has hurt for so long that I was like, oh my God, it doesn't hurt.
You almost think something else is wrong. So like, it doesn't hurt anymore.
Right. And then like, okay, well, but don't push it too hard, you know, but I mean, honestly though, like when I lined up for the big one, for the 100 mm-hmm. miles, I didn't even think about my back all that much at all. For some reason, right. I really didn't. I felt really good. And I felt, you know, I felt great. I mean, it was more of a thought of like, hey, hold yourself back so you don't burn out too quickly. Like,
right. But, you're kind of eloquently, I think, describing what happens a lot with people in early recovery. That's why I love, you know, addict to athletes metaphors of using the same, you know, the same tools and techniques and performances to become a world-class athlete as a world-class individual in sobriety. And it's like knowing your limits. It's about setting small goals. It's about letting the engine warm up before you go full throttle. And then it's about adjusting if necessary. And I think that those principles, they hold true in the world of sports. They hold true in the world of recovery. So let's move forward then to the idea of having your own event, because again, it's great when you have the big fanfare and the banners and the t-shirts and the pre and post meetings and all the hoopla around these big events. But in the world of COVID, in the world of convenience, you had to do your own. So tell me a little bit about the approach, the idea, you know, the thought. I mean, when did you think? And let's talk a little bit about gearing up to that before the event.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was, I mean, I always had my eye on a 100 miler, but I was cautious doing it because, again, I know myself and I didn't want to burn myself out too quickly in the sport of ultra. So from 2015, I built up from marathon to 50K, 50 miler to 100K. And then this was my first 100 miler, but I didn't think I was ever going to do it like this. I thought it was going to be an organized event or something. But it was, it centered around David Clark's passing when I heard David had passed away. And I thought, I've just got to do something big. And I thought the 100 mile distance is such an iconic distance. I said, I got to, that's what I'm going to do. So it was around May when I came to that realization and said, you know, I'm gonna do some fundraising and I'm gonna do it in honor of David Clark and I'm gonna do 100 miles. And then I started thinking about my buddy Corey here in Japan, who said he was attempted to run across Japan once and they didn't make it. And I said, you know, like, I'm going to get with Corey and we're gonna do this thing. We're gonna run from coast to coast in Japan in honor of David Clark. And we're going to do some fundraising for ACT Athlete, you know, to show, you know, that we can recover. And so that's where it all came from. And then when I said it, you know, I'm like, oh geez, I was a little nervous, like, to start telling people about it. Cause again, the metaphor for sobriety and early sobriety, I didn't want to tell too many people I was getting sober. Cause then I would have to do it, you know?
Yep. So, once you're committed. Mm-hmm.
Right. So then when I was like, we're going to do this. It started to come together and then I started to, you know, to train, you know, it was, again, it was this balancing act of like, how do I train for 100 miles when I just got back surgery? So how do I build up my distance? How do I, you know, I had to have a routine every morning of stretching and everything else and nutrition and just staying healthy and trying to stay positive. And there was points where, you know, my back started to not feel too good with some of what I was putting through. And I was like, well, I don't know, maybe it won't happen. I'm like, geez, Luis, I don't want to have to like tap out again. But at the same time, I was like, but if I do, I do. And if I have to, I was like, I was just going to like, hey, I'll just push it to the spring or something. We'll do it in the spring. But, but Corey, I don't want to say thankfully, but Corey had messed his ankle up pretty good because we were going to do it in September, but he messed his ankle up pretty good, which gave me an extra 30 days to train. And I really needed that. And
all in the universe, all in the universe. It's like, yeah, exactly. Everything happens for a reason.
Right. And then, as you were saying before, the pandemic played a big role in, you know, how things played out, because it was just a couple days before, maybe a week, I think, actually before we stepped off, they had a big outbreak of COVID in the city of Hirosaki, and we were planning to go right through there.
Right
and,
down the middle.
So that changed things. Then it became, what are we going to do now? And it was literally 24 hours before we stepped off for the run that we hadn't. I had no idea, like, was I going where I was going? If I was going to step off from the ocean, was I stepping off from the front porch of my house? You know, but yeah. Regardless, I knew I was going to do 100 miles. I just didn't know how.
Yeah. You didn't know how you were going to get them, but you knew that it was going to happen.
I knew the miles.
But see, I like that. You being able, again, to stay fluid and be willing to adjust when necessary. I think that when we get these plans in our heads, especially when it's something that we're doing for ourselves and, you know, just, you know, for no greater purpose than to accomplish something, we think things have to be perfect, and they just don't, because they are perfectly imperfect, I kind of tend to believe. I mean, so I think it's kind of awesome when you started sharing this with other people, you know, Corey aside, were they all like, dude, you're nuts. Like, why would you even do this? I mean, cause I'm sure you work with a lot of alpha males out there. They're like, dude, why? Like, you got a lot of that?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. When I told people that I was doing a 100-mile thing, they were kind of like, okay, well, are you going to be camping the whole way? Or, you know, like, where are you staying? Are you staying in hotels? And I'm like, no, straight shot. And they're like, wait, and they like, it would take them a little while to try to like unpretzel their brain from that. Like, yeah, we're just gonna do it in a straight shot, and I'm gonna do it in under 30 hours. And they're just like, they can't even comprehend. Yeah. And I mean, as I'm saying it, I'm like, you know, is this crazy? Like, can I do this?
It is. No matter how you look at it, it's crazy. What about the people that know you intimately? What about your wife? What was she like? I know she believes in you. I saw the pictures of her and your daughter out there supporting you, but I'm sure she's like, hey, I want you to achieve your goals and your dreams, but I kind of want to keep you here till we all get old and gray. So please proceed with caution. I mean, I know she's supportive, but did she give you any like words of caution?
Yeah. I mean, she knows me very well, and she knew I could do it. She says she's always believed that I could do that, like whatever I put my mind to.
Yeah.
And then she's also, though, after it was all, you know, there's words of caution, you know. And at one point I remember she kind of did stop supporting the whole thing because I was I wasn't really feeling it, and I want to do a long training run. And then she's like, I'm not going to support you in that training run. So if you want to go do it, you're on your own. And
you got to get up at 4 in the morning when no one needs you, huh?
Yeah, that was the way of holding me back some from, you know, trying to put a regulator on me that I wasn't perhaps able to put on myself at that time.
That's awesome.
And then at the end, I tell you what, at the end of this thing, she said, I'll never do this again.
Yep.
Because she saw me in so much misery and pain. It wasn't enjoyable for her. She didn't think. And I didn't realize how, you know, how painful it would be at the end. And it was very painful. So
it's interesting. We don't, again, the metaphors between recovery and athletics, we don't really think about how the people who love us and who support us, how they're going to feel or react to this. I remember there was times when I've done events and I've done things that have been super hard and challenging. And I remember Marissa doing the same thing, being like, you know, just in tears for me, like, taking a knee now and moving out, you're gonna be fine. Don't do any long-term damage or whatever. But it's kind of hard on the people that are around us too, because they want to support us, but they see some reality that sometimes we don't. And so I love that human emotion part of it, of like, you know, that the optimistic like fear, I guess we'll call it. It's a neat thing.
Yeah. For sure. There's so many, you know, similes and metaphors we have for the whole thing. You know, it's like in the beginning, you know, of getting into recovery and sobering up, like there's that doubt of like, can I do this? Just like as it was like when I first lined up to start running, I was like, can I do this? And then it's like in this community, just as in the community of recovery, you know, in the community of ultras and such, it's like, it takes a little while for me to realize, well, it's like, well, I don't have to do it alone. And there's plenty of people out there that you can ask for advice, and they're more than willing to help you, and they're more than willing to maybe pace you or run alongside you and recruit you. And then, it becomes just like I was saying too, is like, you know, I had to be careful who I was telling what I was going to do, because once I start telling folks, then I really got to do it. And I was like that with recovery too, but you hit on it, man. And it was the same way I approached recovery, the same way I was approaching running in the beginning, was like, I was like, hey, don't want to overdo it. I went out the gate really fast in recovery. I was like going to tons of meetings and always in the book, and like just saturation of like, I got like burned out on recovery. So seriously, like I had to pace myself, because this thing, I'm in it for the long run. For sure. I want to be around for the rest of my life.
I love it.
Burning myself out in a couple of years. And then, it went from being like, waking up and being like, oh, waking up with a hangover is awesome, to like, another day. Yeah. It's over again.
Another experience missed, huh? Yeah. No, you're right. And I think that's it. Sometimes we plateau in that kind of stuff. And it's like, and it happens in athletics where you plateau, you just like, I've done that race. I've been there. I've seen this. And I think that when people start to plateau, they're missing that next important step, which is once you've become the athlete, then you become the coach. And it's like, and that's a whole nother world of like benefit there. But I'm curious then, you guys chose the date, you decided to go. I mean, like you said, until the day of, hours before, you didn't know really how it was going to end. You kind of had a idea how it was going to start, but like, walk us through a little bit about the experience now. I mean, what did you name the run? And then let's get you through the first half, and let's get a little bit of a background on kind of the experience.
Yeah, sure. So we named the run the Honshu Healing 100. Honshu being the main island of Japan. Healing because, well, trying to heal from the loss of David Clark, and also the healing that happens in recovery. And a healing for myself as well, to heal that part of me, that was being lost through the injury, to come back from that. And then of course the 100, because it's 100 miles. We weren't too sure where we're going to step off from, because of the regulations that are placed on me. I'm active duty military guy in the Navy here. And, they can lock down the base and keep me on base, or they could even lock me down in my house. So I remember thinking, if they lock me down in my house, I'm going to run circles around my house for 100 miles. I would have like just made a moat around my house through my footsteps. I said, they lock me on base, I'm going to run around the airfield about, 11 times. But they didn't do either. They said, hey, we can go off base. We just cannot go to Hirosaki Prefecture in Hirosaki City. So we ended up stepping off from the Pacific Ocean, and we ran 50 miles. And it happened to just like be perfect, because we ran from the ocean. And at 50 miles, we ended up at a peak that was on Lake Tawada. This really nice, deep volcanic lake. And it peaks at the 50-mile point. It was just perfect. So we ran up to the peak. 50 miles, and then we were going to run all the way back. That first 50 miles was, we had to hold ourselves back some. We started at 5 o'clock in the morning, and we stepped off, and it was windy, and it was a little rainy, and it was a little chilly, and but we felt great. So we
had, I love that. Less than ideal conditions, yet you still chose to go. And I think sometimes, again, let's get it back to recovery. Is there ever an ideal time to raise the flag and be like, I'm going to be done drinking today? Usually it's in the middle of a crisis that you kind of want to lean on that substance, but you're like, you'll never have a perfect day, right? So why not go now?
Right. Absolutely.
I love it.
No, if I was waiting for the perfect moment to sober up, it was never going to happen. So it was just another excuse to keep going when I was drinking. It became, it's just, it's fear. There's no doubt about it. It's just fear that was holding me back when I was in active addiction. It was, as miserable as drinking alcoholically was, it was still familiar. And it was like, I knew what I was going to get, which was more pain, more misery, more heartache. but at least it was familiar. So I remember I just didn't know what the other side looked like. I didn't know what sobriety looked like. So it was really tough to get there. I mean, I drank alcoholically for over 2 decades. And then, yeah, I mean, I did leverage a really experience of being arrested and in jail, and like all the stars were lining up for me where I was in jail, my third DUI, I'm convinced my career is over. My now wife, then girlfriend, was flying in from Thailand to America, and I'm in jail, no idea who's going to pick her up.
Yeah.
It was a great scenario for rock bottom. And then, yeah.
No perfect time to start than now, right? I mean, they're like, it's time.
Right, send it.
So then figuratively speaking, Chris, the first 50 miles to a certain degree, mm-hmm. all uphill to a certain degree, because that's kind of where you ended, right? I mean, the gradual mm-hmm. climb up to the peak mm-hmm. at halfway.
Yeah, so yeah, we felt really, really great all the way going, and we ran like a 5-hour marathon, and we were trucking, so we had to slow down a little bit and say, hey, we need to take it easy. But I started to get, as strange as I started to get some pains like in my my ankle and then my knee, like around mile 35, coming up through what's called the Rossi Gorge. And I remember when that started to happen, I started to panic a little bit and think like, oh no.
Get in your head. Yeah.
Right. If my ankle and my knee feel like this at 35 miles, I'm like, what's it going to feel like at 95 miles, you know, or 65 miles. So I'm like, oh boy. And then I had to pull myself back and go to the lessons that have been taught. And that's like, well, you're not there yet, you know,
right.
Like, pull it back to the mile you're in, the moment you're in, and realize that things can change and they will change. Like there's nothing permanent. So yeah, I had to talk myself down off that ledge a little bit and told my buddy Corey what was going on with me and how I was, hey man, I'm starting to get some of this and some of that. And I can see like, he's like, oh no, like, is this guy going to tap out on me?
Yeah. See, and that's not going to complete
the 100 miles.
That's the fear, right? Because again, I know I've ran with people before that hold all that stuff in, and then all of a sudden out of nowhere, it's like, they just decompose and like, dude, what happened? And they kept it to themselves because there's that fear, right? That if I start letting people know that there's weakness or that there's problems, they're going to think I can't do this. And then they're going to stop doubting me. And then they throw themselves out. Marissa and I last night, we were a guilty pleasure, Chris. We were watching Hell's Kitchen, you know, Chef Gordon Ramsay. And it was an episode where there's like 4 people left and they're just running and gunning. And out of nowhere, this chef that's been talking smack the whole time is like, oh my gosh, I have a back problem now. And you could tell he doesn't have a back problem because he's like, the cameras are everywhere. So they're showing him doing wacky stuff. And I'm like, he's trying to tap out because he knows he's going to lose and he doesn't want to lose this way. But it was funny because he talked him into staying and then he got kicked off anyway. But the funny part about that is that most people think that if I start showing weakness, then that's going to give me a way out and then other people join. Corey didn't do that to you though. He didn't say, well, all right, see you later. Well, I'm going to keep going. See you on Monday at the base. Like,
no.
Letting out weakness, were you nervous that like it would exacerbate, or did you want to just kind of let them know where you stood? Because I like that metaphor.
Yeah, I wanted to give him a heads up of what was going on with me, but Corey certainly wasn't going to let me off the hook, right? Corey, actually, what he said to me, he says like, well, does it hurt when you walk as much as it hurts when you run? I'm like, yeah. He's like, well, then you might as well run.
I love it. That's the running partner you need. Oh, I love it.
So that's a pretty good point, Corey.
Good point.
So, and then at the same time, I mean, he's not heartless. So he said, well, you know, I mean, anytime you need to walk, let's walk. And anytime you can run, let's run. And he was feeling great. So I'm like, man, I'm sorry, Corey. Like, I thought I would be doing better than this because I was watching the way he was running, you know, and getting ready for it. Like, he's out there doing these quick runs and short and this and that. And he was running. He didn't even come off his regular running plan that he does all the time, you know, to do this thing. He didn't taper or anything. So I was concerned about him. And then I was the one that started falling apart. So,
yeah, but I'm sure in Corey's mind, he's thinking 7 months, you know, post-op. So, I mean, come on, man. Right. So I think it's funny how it all kind of plays into line there, but you're right. You said, hang with it. Things are going to change. They never just as are. And so did it start to change? Did it start to move? Yeah.
Yeah, it did. So we made our way through the Rossi Gorge, and then we started to climb up the peak next to Lake Tawada, and things definitely changed. things initially changed for the worse, where I started to get more pain in different places. But, and I remember coming, there was a couple of short little downhills there, and I was like thinking to myself, like, boy, oh boy, like coming back down off this peak is really going to hurt.
It'll be rough.
But again, try to, hey, stay in the moment, stay in the mile, and just get it done. So got up to the peak. It was the sun was going down, but at this point the rain started to clear, but then as we got to the peak, it was super super foggy, and I had on all these bear bells because we're in bear country and stuff, and I remember thinking to myself, like, man, I'm so glad Corey's here, because I'd be scared out of my mind right now. This thick fog and the wind and it was kind of spooky up there, and he had said the same. So I was we got to the peak, and then I was changing out clothes and fueling up, and then we started to come down, and as we were coming down, it was really painful. Again, trying to not trip out about it and try to apply some lessons and some teachings of, you know, rather than fighting the pain and tensing up against it, was kind of like accepting it and realizing that it belongs there, and that, you know, that it's going to change still, and just talking myself through that, you know, the ever evolving and changing internal landscape, like it's not gonna last, and you're gonna get through it. And as I did that, I could feel it lessen some, and some of it starting to loosen, you know, its grip on me. And then also, like, I was in a counseling session once with my therapist, and he said it was kind of along the lines of, like, are you doing this stuff and putting yourself through these things are you trying to take this pain and offer it up to as symbolically for the pain of others and such. Mm-hmm. And I started to think about that, like, started to like think about, like, this pain, like, this is nothing, man. Like, this is just some physical pain, but this is nothing compared to what folks are going through right now that are loved ones of the addicted, that perhaps just watched their son or their daughter, their uncle, their aunt, their brother, their sister, you know, pass on from this disease. Like, this is nothing, man. Like, and if they can keep going, like, you can keep going.
Wow.
You know? And doing this as symbolic, you know, and thinking about what is this race? Like, you know, what are you doing it for? You know, start thinking of the deeper meaning of it, you know?
Yeah.
And there was no way I was not going to make it. You know, there was no way I was going to quit. There was no way I was going to get it done, because of what it meant, you know, what it meant to me. It was, and then also, like, you know, thinking of, this is a tribute to David, you know.
Yeah.
Got it. We're going to keep going. And then at some point around mile 65 or whatever, like, I felt great. I was like, what is going on here?
How does this work?
How was I in such pain from mile 35 to 65? And now all of a sudden I feel great. And to the point that I was, you know, again, I feel great. And, you know, hey, take it easy, man. And I was like, oh my God. I'm like telling Corey, like, Corey, I feel great. And I'm like, and the faster I run, the better I feel. And we're like running like 840 miles down through a Rossi Gorge.
That's how do you plan for that, right? I mean, you just let it happen. You said something, Chris, that really resonates with me that I want the listeners to kind of pick up on. You said at that point in time, and the pain was inevitable, you said the pain belonged here. Like, it's like, I love that. Like, the pain belongs here. And, you know, we'll carry it for a minute, but we got to let it go sometime and either accept it or reject it. But I love that principle of the pain belongs here. And I think, you know, again, metaphorically looking at recovery, that race of recovery, at some point, you don't know where the pain's going to come on. You don't know when you're going to unload it or you're going to offload it, but you know that it's inevitable. Same thing with recovery treatment. You sign up for your first day of sobriety. You're like, I don't know where the pain's going to come out, but I know it's going to get me, but it belongs somewhere, and then let it go. I speak about that for a second, brother. I mean, how the mindset of like, yeah, it makes sense. It would hurt now. And I'm going to let it hurt now, but then I'm going to leave it behind and something else will hurt. And then that will hurt less. I mean, tell me that mindset. I'm intrigued by that.
Yeah. It's just allowing the pain to be there, allowing the feelings to be there rather than, oh, it hurts. How do I pacify this? How do I change this? What can I do to change how I feel right now? Instead, am I able to just sit with it and allow it to be there, which is a completely different mindset of like, oh my God, feelings, drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what it was for years. Oh my God, uncomfortability, drink, you know? So it's a matter of just being able to reckon as I listen to a lot of Tara Brach, and there's an acronym for it. And it's called RAIN, which is recognize what's going on in me, recognize the feelings and things I'm going through, allow it to be there. So I'm not fighting against it. I'm not tensing up against it. And then investigating where I feel it in my body, and then nurturing myself and just being kind to my experience and trying to approach my experience.
That's brilliant. That's good advice.
Yeah. So to apply that, yeah, I just like, it's part of my practice is I'm trying to learn to sit with whatever's going on. Good, bad, you know, neutrality. I struggle with neutrality probably more than I do pleasant or unpleasant. You know, I struggle with like, oh, I'm bored. Like, you know,
yeah.
Yeah. Again, so part of the teachings is when I'm reaching for something, it's like, if I can take a second to pause and maybe do some introspection of like, what am I afraid of? What can I face? And it's as simple as, you know, even just like, oh, I'm reaching for my cell phone, or I'm reaching for a piece of cake, or,
yep, you know,
God forbid, I'm ever reaching for a drug or a drink again.
Exactly. But
those are the things, you know, to just take that second and be like, hey, what's going on inside?
What's going on with this? See, and I love it. And I love the fact that like all this stuff came at a really interesting point in your 100 miler and, you know, running through the fog, having it go dark, and then feeling that second wind. And I love the second wind. We all get the second wind, and sometimes a third and fourth if we're really lucky. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine about the time that your second wind's clicking in and you're starting to feel a little better, things are changing. Sun's coming up. Things are starting to change. I mean, you know, it's from light to dark. How'd the race proceed?
Yeah. So, yeah, the second wind and feeling great and running out of the gorge. I remember looking up and the skies had cleared, starry night. It was just beautiful. Mm. But then, yeah, around mile 75-ish, I felt like, oh my, hey, we got to stop. I'm like, I think there's a rock in my shoe because my foot started to hurt. And then I was like, and I took my shoe off and I remember shining my headlight in my shoe and I'm like, please let there be a rock in there.
Yeah, please. Where's the rock?
Like, I was like, oh, no, there's no rock.
Oh man.
And then I looked down in the shoe and I saw that there was a wet spot. And I was like, oh, that's no good.
No.
And then I was like, hey, Corey, I think I've got some blisters. And then we sat up on this stone wall and he treated me, you know, he like his son, and took my, you know, took my sock off. We looked, he was like, oh yeah, he goes, you got something going on there. And I had started to develop some really big blisters on my feet. Anyway, taped up my foot, and we got to the next place where we're meeting up with the wife, and then I was starting to fall apart. So all that like, hey, I feel great, and then like, I don't know, I started to feel really bad. Mile 80, we started to feel even worse, and the sun was coming up, the wind was was whipping, and it was a cool breeze for sure. So
the crazy part about your mile 80, and I need to touch base with you on this, is we were following you out here, and like I said, we were down in Las Vegas with my father-in-law. He wanted to go out and get a little trip in before his surgery, and so we were doing all the cycling and stuff there. But right about your mile 80, as you were checking in and doing the stuff, maybe it was a little bit after that, we were recording a podcast with another one of David's dear friends, Mishka Shivali, and it was probably one of the most spiritual conversations I've had with anyone since David in that mindset, because it was wild, because the only reason we were speaking with Mishka was because I heard a tribute that he gave to David on Rich Roll's podcast. And I thought, to reach out to this guy. And I've heard his name a few times, but I remember sitting there thinking as I'm talking to him, you know, having that connection through David, and then seeing your reports coming up on the other side of the world. And I'm like, person, we're just kind of like, this is wild how one man has touched our lives to get to know you and Mishka and so many other people. And it blew me away at like, you know, the all-encompassing effect of one person, you know, touching in someone's life and what happened. And it was like, how extreme was this to me? And I'm like, this is wild. I got Mishka here. I've got Chris over there. The team's like giving you feedback. And I'm just like, this is wild. And I thought it hit me there for a minute. Like, man, David's hand is still very much at play in a lot of stuff that we do. And it was humbling. It was a humbling thing. First, I talked about that afterwards. We're like, that was too much. And so about that time you were having that experience, we were having this experience, and you're right. It's so cool how interconnected all this stuff is. So, you know, so you got your heels patched up. You probably felt that was, you know, a long time you needed to have that taken care of. And then like Linus and Charlie Brown sitting on that brick wall, you and Charlie, like you decided to jump off and keep going.
Yeah. So we jumped off and kept going. We pretty much, I mean, and then
Corey
started falling apart as well a little bit. So we were walking and then we were jogging, you know, we were making micro goals of like, hey, let's just jog to that stop sign. All right. And we'll walk from there to there and then jog from there to there. And then probably the last 10 miles we were just walking and we were, I mean, I can say I was in extreme pain. I mean, and I didn't, I don't know why I didn't think it would hurt that much, but I just didn't. There's just a healthy dose of denial or what.
Yes.
Yeah, my feet were so sore and swollen. My shoes were, you know, I had them almost, the laces all loosened up and they were swelling, and you know, it just hurt so bad. And all my major muscle groups were locking up pretty good. And well, we just kept walking, and we were like just at probably a 25-minute mile, just walking like zombies, walking and walking and walking. Yes. That last 10 miles, oh my goodness, it felt like it was never going to end. And,
yeah.
yeah. So,
I liked your post. You're like, your last post was like, we're going to walk it in from here. And I thought, good for him. Yeah. I loved that.
I was having a hard time staying awake too. I was, every time like I would sit down, I would fall asleep immediately. So I took about 4 micro naps in the last 10 miles. And so we got to the end and I like hit the ground. I was just laying down. I was so hurt and I had nothing left. And then got me in the van and brought me home. And I couldn't even get out of the van when we got home. I had the neighbors had crutches. They had to go get me crutches to crutch my way out of the van. I crutched my way.
They're thinking, this self-inflicted pain. What the heck, man? Well, let's back up a minute. And I love the fact that you're just trying to finish this race and go home. But rewind a minute. Because again, that finish line was one that you created. And there wasn't the ticker tape and the bands playing and the orange slices and the massage therapist at the end. It was one that you guys drew. And I think there's a lot to that, because again, you started, you know, with your starting line and you finished at your finish line. And it wasn't, like I said, there wasn't a lot of fanfare and stuff. So then I'm like, you know, where's the worth, right? I mean, there's so much that happened in there. You know, we talked about this now for the last 30 minutes, but it took you how many hours to complete?
Yeah, so it took us a total of like 31 hours. I think it was 31:13 or something like that. Yeah, and as you said, there was nobody there. The finish line. It was just us back at the beach that we started from, you know. That was it. But
your body knew you did it.
Yeah, it felt so good to get it done. And I was just like, it was amazing. And I also was, there was some of that like, well, I did that, like I never have to do this again.
Yeah. Done and done.
Of course, you know, a few days later my mind starts to wander and go, well, you know, maybe I could do better next time.
So funny.
Yeah,
so it keeps us human. Mm-hmm. But I love that. I love that mindset though, Chris, more than you'll ever know, because again, you did it because it was there and because you had a reason and a purpose, and you know, the inspiration, like the ripple effect, you know, you don't know where that's going to land. I mean, it's inspired me. It's inspired a bunch of the athletes. It's, And it's cool because, again, you don't need all of that hoopla. You don't need the medal at the end to know you did it. I mean, you have 100 miles on the soles of your feet now to prove that you did. Mm-hmm. Coming off of a 7-month recovery from back surgery, I'm like, you know, mm-hmm. you've crushed a lot. And so, you know, to a certain degree, I know that you're not the kind that want to like put your name up on a big billboard and say I did it. But like all in the same mm-hmm. breath, I'm thinking, you know, it's amazing that the people that needed to know you did it were there. And, you know, like I said, the effect will carry on for a long time. You glad you did it? I mean,
oh my God. Yeah. So, and I'm glad you said that. I never wanted it to be about me and about like, look at Chris and look what he did and pat myself on the back. I always want these things to be about, look what he did. And if he can do it, I could do something too. What can yes. I do? You know what yep. I mean? To inspire others of like, you know, this is what's possible and recovery is possible and you can change. Like trust me, man, if you talked to me 15 years ago, I was not thinking that I was going to be an ultra athlete at that point.
No.
And here I am. And how does that happen? It's like, well, it's one step at a time and just a consistent effort. And it turned my life around. But I never wanted it to be about me. I always wanted it to be about this is what's possible. And when I finish these things, it's like, well, I did that. Like, what else can I do?
You know,
it comes to the point of like, you know, where it just bleeds over into so many other areas of my life, you know?
Yeah.
So anything's possible in my mind now.
I think you're right. I mean, yeah, you've proven that. And that's kind of the neat thing too. It's like you had a lot of variables stacked up against you to not, yet you're like, yeah, but we're going to. And I think that's so many of us find that one lever of I guess pain or discomfort or, you know, rejection. And we're like, well, we'll take this exit and see you later. But don't do that. Like stay on course, stay on track, because you know, the pain belongs where it comes in. Excuse mm-hmm. it as fast as it comes in. I mean, I don't know, man. There's so much inspiration to this that I think it was more than just a run. And that's right. What I hope the listeners take away from this is, yeah, the physical feat is amazing, but on a spiritual, emotional, and mental, like, I guess, you know, platform, you've learned centuries of knowledge to apply wisdom from this that, you know, it's going to peak in every corner of your life, I'd imagine.
Mm-hmm.
Not just a race, sure. Everything leading right. up to it, right? I mean, that's why we're talking about it.
Yeah, it's been amazing for sure. And you know, as you're saying, like, you know, I don't hesitate to adjust, you know, and mm-hmm. and even if I have to take a pause, a strategic pause of like, you know, as I do in Badwater, put the stake in the ground and revisit it, you know, is like yeah, man, it's just God, it's hard for me to articulate. It's it's just it's an amazing thing, and it's just that consistent effort and never giving up, you know, not giving up on myself and just the support around me. It's been tremendous. So it's hard for me to put into words how much
I love it.
This thing meant to me.
Yeah. Well, I love it because from my point of view, it looks like, you know, we're all motivated by something, and every one of us could do a 100-miler if we were properly motivated to do what we needed to get there. You know, it might take me, you know, 99 hours to get through that, but mm-hmm. you know, it's not about running. It's about accomplishing a goal that you set for yourself. It's about filling the measure of your creation and being able to experience. I mean, you know, again, in the car driving there, you miss so much, but it being intimate with the shoes on your feet, with the surround, the sounds, the smells, the real fear about, you know, being a dangling, you know, bell for a bear to come chew on, like all that stuff is very real. And you miss that when you're humming along life at 65 miles an hour, like slow down, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Very intimate with the environment or out there. It was great. But yeah, I think you hit on something there too. Is like, you don't have to, like, you don't have to go out and run 100 miles. Like, everyone's got their thing, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's just so important to establish a goal and work toward it, you know, and to I mean, really to prove to myself that I could do this, you know? And I, yeah. like I said, I believe, you know, we're capable of so much more than we ever give ourselves credit for, you know, that we're a lot of times we're not operating at, you know, full capacity that, you know, yeah. for me, and speak for myself. And I mean, I know, like, I hold myself back. There's still a lot of fear there. Like, you know, in life of what, can I do this, you know, and like, oh my God, I'm not cut out for this. And there's imposter syndromes and all these other different things that come into play.
I hear you.
So, yeah.
I love it, man.
Yeah.
Chris, there's so much more we're going to be able to touch base on. This is why I think you're going to be one of these reoccurring guests, like it or not, you know, you may not be getting sleep in the near future, but nonetheless, thank you again for spending some time with us. The stuff that you gift to Addict to Athlete, it's palpable. You can feel it. So thank you for putting in the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. I appreciate
my pleasure. And so athletes, check Chris out, you know, jump on, you know, there's a lot of stuff that he does. He's on the social media pages, jump out there, reach out. Yeah, he's a good person to have in your corner, but, I feel like we should probably say this too, before we sign off. And that is, for all of you that want to get to know Coach David Clark, an individual that's highly influenced both mine and Chris's life. I highly recommend jumping on to, the We Are Superman podcast. A dear friend of Coach Clark, his name's, Bill, Stahl, Bill Stahl.
Stahl,
yeah. I've met Bill, several times, and he is now taking over the We Are Superman podcast. And he put on a little intro video about who he is, how he came about, David, and, you know, check it out. The We Are Superman podcast is live. And so carrying on David's legacy and his memory through there, go back and re-listen to David's podcast, jump into his books. I'm just started his final book, and it's bittersweet because every time I hear his voice, it's like he's still here. And so I think we're very lucky that we have that kind of stuff. But the reason why Chris and I had met was because of David's influence. And so, you know, let him influence your life. So thank you, Bill, and the We Are Superman podcast for keeping that movement going. So athletes, go check that out. And I specifically want to give thanks to Radio Ronan and the Radio Ronan Network for having Addict to Athlete be part of the Radio Ronan family. Thanks for all that you guys do. Again, Chris, thank you so much, man, for spending the wee hours in the morning with Team Addict to Athlete. Appreciate everything you do for us, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for giving me an opportunity to be of service. I do appreciate
absolutely.
It.
I know you'll be back on. So athletes, until next time, go turn that mess into a very powerful message.